This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
If you're looking for love, pro wrestling love, that is, you've come to the right place. This is volume number 7 of the Pro Wrestling Love series, episode 2 of the greatest WCW Jim Crockett promotion matches of all time. I am your host, Marty Sleaze, a.k.a. Superstar Sleaze, on the PWO forums and Twitter. I'm joined today by Justin, a.k.a. JK Webb, on the Pro Wrestling Only forums, and Milky Way Champ on Twitter. We want to thank the Place to Be Nation, not just for hosting this podcast, but for also hosting the greatest WCW matches of all time countdown. We look forward to seeing how the voting shakes out and what ends up being the greatest WCW match of all time. We have completed numbers 100 through 76, and so today we'll be looking at numbers 75 through number 51. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. I think you'll have number 75 higher. I think most people have it at number 1, so I'm probably a psychopath for having it at 75. It's War Games 1992, the Dangerous Alliance versus the Team WCW.
That one I do have higher. So
yeah, I'm not too surprised about that. So what's your 75, brother?
So my 75 is probably, I'd say, one of the biggest moments for WCW when the undefeated Goldberg comes in for Mr. Hollywood Hogan. So do you have that one at the Georgia Dome?
No, I don't, but very strong childhood nostalgia for this one.
Yeah. So I guess this is one of those matches where I feel like that the moment sort of outweighs just the match itself, the moment and the emotion that is created throughout the match, in my opinion, sort of outweighs, like, I guess, some of the stuff that I have below it, if that makes sense. But anyway, I mean, from what I understand, this match was kind of like a last minute booking decision. I think I read this somewhere. It said Goldberg stated in an interview last year, from where I read it, that he only found out about the match a week before when he was watching WCW Thunder. And they
it's
said
kind
at
of
the
makes
time,
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the time, WWE had taken over WCW in the ratings war, and WCW had beaten them for 84 weeks in a row. Of course, that's in there, but I think 83 weeks. I don't know. Maybe this article had it wrong, but anyway, the match momentarily swung the ratings back. And from what I understand, I remember listening to Bischoff's podcast at some point, and I guess this match was, or according to Bischoff, was Hogan's idea. Had you heard that before?
No, I had not. No.
Yeah. Apparently, it was his idea to do it at the Georgia Dome.
Yeah. I think a lot of people complain about it being on Nitro, but I don't see the issue. I think doing a title change here and there on TV it's good. Makes the TV work well.
Yeah, I read that it did it drew a record rating of 6.91, nearly 10 million viewers.
pretty insane. Yeah,
So
I remember.
it worked out okay.
I remember there had to be some build to it because I knew that it was going to happen because we were at a hotel that night in Maine, and I was like, we was adamant that we had to watch Nitro to the very end. So I remember the I remember the finish.
Yeah, I would say, at this time, Goldberg was the man. Everyone thought Goldberg was the man, from little kids. My dad thought Goldberg was the man. I think, people's grandparents probably thought Goldberg was the man. But it's just one of those moments that's kind of hard to come by. I think everyone was captivated in it. It was bit, you know, everyone was glued to the screen for that time, and that's kind of why it places at number 75 for me.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely an iconic moment in WCW history. So number 74 for me is WCW World Heavyweight Champion, the Nature Boy Ric Flair versus Flying Brian Pillman from April 13th, 1991.
Is this the one with where they're chopping so hard that their chests are bleeding?
To be honest with you, I don't know if that's 91 or 1990.
I think that might be the 90 match, actually. But
90.
either way, their matches did not make my list, but they were like two of the ones that kind of were on the very, very bubble of getting on here, because I really enjoyed both of their matches. My favorite one is the one, and I think it is the 91, but it's the one where they're chopping so hard that I remember like chairs Flair's chest is bleeding in it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. Yeah, these are two matches that I couldn't leave off. I think the Flair Pillman series, that like this is the difference I think between being a an internet wrestling fan that's just kind of a part of the community and stuff, and then becoming a PWO fan as you discover this shit, like the good shit. Like I had never heard of Flair versus Pillman on TV before until I
Oh, me
stepped into
either. And
you know.
you're exactly right about that, because any time that I talk to any of my friends that watch wrestling, and they say, "Well, hey, what's a match I haven't seen before that I should check out?" I go to these Pillman Flair matches all the time
Oh
to,
yeah,
when I'm taking, yeah.
I bet. I bet those are big hits because I mean, obviously, you want somebody that people know, and that's Flair. And then I think people usually have a general, recollection of Pillman.
Yeah,
So,
for sure.
anyways, so I think we'll get into this more as the time goes on and we get more Flair. But like, so as I mentioned before, like babyface Flair is a different beast than heel Flair. I think heel Flair has a lot of different modes depending on who he wrestles and stuff. And I think with Pillman, he settles more into the firefight mode is what I call it. It's when he usually wrestles somebody like a Ronnie Garvin or a Wahoo McDaniel, somebody he's going to trade the leather with, somebody they're just going to go for it, go for broke and just beat the shit out of each other. And for some people, that's their favorite type of Flair. I love all Flair equally. It's like, I love every bit of him. So it's like loving your wife, right? You love all aspects of him. You love all aspects of your wife. So, anyways, the this Nature Boy is very much in that mode. But I think one key difference is between the 91 and the 90 match is we're starting to see 90s Flair, which is a different beast than 80s Flair. 90s Flair is going to incorporate a lot more cheating in there. It's going to be a little bit more of the caricature. There's a lot of feet on the ropes. There's low blows. There's eye raking. There's a lot of jaw jacking. And I think there's a lot of tropes that people really associate with Ric Flair, but I think it's because they've watched more 90s Flair. If you watch 80s Flair, it's a totally different strategy. It's usually like a lot of short knees, a lot of chops, and a lot of different angles and strategy shifts. Here it's more outright cheating. The cheating in the 80s Flair usually doesn't come until the very end. So it's an interesting thing to watch the evolution of Ric Flair. But this is a great match. The finish is just Flair blinds Pillman with an eye rake, and he actually drop kicks the ref, which is great. But he hits Air Pillman. But so you get the visual pin, and then so that puts Pillman over. But then once the actual finish is that you get the figure four with Arn assisting. Again, more cheating. Not to say you wouldn't use the ropes in the 80s or have JJ doing it, but it was just like there was just a lot of cheating in the 90s with Flair. So it's just a cool thing just to keep track of as you watch Flair.
Yeah, and just out of curiosity, I guess we'll get to it if you have it, but do you have the other one
Yeah, I
on
do.
your
I do.
list?
Yeah,
Okay,
it's just
cool.
a
Awesome.
tad bit higher. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, my number 74. Last one was Hogan Goldberg. This one's Hogan Luger. Do you have this one?
Is this the one my childhood
100.
like for?
Yeah, this is the 8497 100th episode of Nitro. Do you have that one?
You know what? I should have put. You know what? I might think about putting that at 100 now. How do you not put the
Yeah.
match that made you a professional wrestling fan in your top 100?
Oh man, in this moment, man, so I remember going to high school the next day, and I think we were all putting each other the torture rack the next day.
Hell yeah, brother. It's a great move. Someone needs to bring it back. That move is sick.
Yeah, so Nitro had a 4.36 on this night, and Raw pulled in a 2.6. But yeah, I can remember watching this in the living room of my house and literally like jumping up and down when Luger won. I was just really pumped for this. It's just a really great moment. Luger racks Hogan. Doesn't get much more fun than that. Hogan had some pretty. I remember like Hogan having some pretty good offense in this match too. You know, he was he was going at Luger pretty hard, and then Luger turns it around and there you go. He fends off some of the NWO and racks Hogan, gets the big moment on the 100th episode of Nitro. I would say it's pretty unforgettable, and it's a super fun match too. And I just had it one spot above the Goldberg one. But I mean, at this point, you know, if you can't tell, I mean, Hogan, I think he has some really good stuff during this era on Nitro.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Hogan is underrated. And I think it was so important that the WCW get a win, you know? And I think
Oh yeah.
it was
Yeah, the
great.
timing was
Good
great.
booking. Yeah, all the booking, like I said, the booking in 97 immaculate. Just perfect booking. Just great. For sure. Yeah, and it's great. And I'm so glad Luger got that title win. You know, both I mean, it was very short, and then the 91 reign isn't that great. So it's a little bit of a bummer that Luger never really got his proper world championship reign, but still, to have that moment is a great moment to point to. It's like Luger was over as hell. You know, while Stinger was up in those rafters, he was down in the trenches, baby.
Yeah, Luger was super over during this time. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure, man. So my number 73, you already mentioned, so we can talk about now is NWA World Champion Ric Flair versus Bobby Eaton from January 7th, 1990.
Yeah, awesome.
You want to go first?
Well, I kind of see it as Bobby Eaton's best solo match, you know. And I'm a big Bobby, but I'm a Bobby Eaton guy. I like Bobby Eaton a lot. They had a match right at the Clash,
Yes, that's right, 91.
and I like this one just a little bit more. I remember Lance Russell's on commentary during this match.
Yes.
Yeah, so what? I mean, Lance Russell's on commentary. It gets like an extra 8.25 stars.
Hell yeah.
I just it's a really great. You want you go ahead and talk about it.
Again, this is babyface Ric Flair, so he doesn't turn heel until a month later. So it's again, it's I love babyface Ric Flair. It's a real shame we don't get too much of it. And like you said, Bobby Eaton getting a chance to shine in singles is also a rare treat. So it's kind of a nice rarity that comes together, and we're very fortunate to have it. Because I Bobby Eaton is just, oh my God, his sweet home Alabama right hand. Whew. That's the shit legends are made out of, and it's just a great punch. And the shine is so good because it's that Flair shine, and that's the thing about babyface Flairs. It just makes you want to pump your fist. And then when Bobby does get the chance to work the heat segment, he works the neck like a champ. I mean, he's the man. You know, when it comes to, you know, a good heat segment, you know, Eaton's your man because he's got all that offense and stuff. Stan Lane ends up coming out. Flair ends up catching the knee drop from the top rope. So we're looking figure four. Lane ends up hopping on the apron. We get Cornette in the ring. Flair nails Cornette with the racket. And then nails Eaton with the racket, and it's just great. You know, it's just that whole fighting fire with fire. You're giving the heels a taste of their own medicine, and then the world champion stands tall 3-on-1, and still wins, which is a point I want to point out. Ric Flair's a babyface, so he's going to stand tall. This whole, like, Ric Flair doesn't stand tall thing, it's when it's appropriate, guys. Got to have context, baby. So, the Nature Boy looking good.
Awesome. So, my number 73, I think is where we are now, is, again, back to Lex Luger versus Brian Pillman from Halloween Havoc 1989. Do you have that one on your list?
Yeah, I got that, like, probably not too much higher. Actually, maybe... Yeah, good. Yeah, maybe a good bit higher.
Cool. All right, we'll get to that one.
What do we got here? Number 72. Oh, yes, you brought up this match a little bit ago. It's U.S. Tag Team Champions Midnight Express versus the Fantastics from Pro, March 26, 88. Why don't you start that one?
Yeah, I had that one at 78.
We're usually pretty close, it seems like, so...
Yeah, this is the one that was just the way I remember it, it's just the Fantastics debut, and basically it's they devoted pretty much the entire episode to this match, right?
I think they devoted the entire episode worldwide to their match. Actually, they might have done they might have done the same thing with this one. So yeah, I can see that.
I mean, at least it's pretty.
They did devote the they did. Yeah, because Pro's not as long as the other ones. Yep.
Yeah. I've got a lot of their matches on here. And this is, I mean, for me, this one is ranked at number 78, but I just remember thinking it was a lot of fun. You got the new baby face tag team coming in. It's their debut. And they gave them a great platform for that in this one.
Yeah. So I'll just, yeah, like you said, I think I have like three of these, maybe, I don't know, maybe four, who knows. But so I'll try to remember that I said it here and I won't repeat it everywhere. But the number one thing that the 2020 professional wrestling is missing is the old, you know, babyface hits a good move, sends the heels out. We do a little high five, do a little strut, and then do a little booty shake. Like, there needs to be more booty shaking, strutting, and high five in professional wrestling. We're not getting enough of that.
That's right.
So I dig that. Just a little breaking down of the Fantastics, I guess, what I'll do on this one, and probably talk about the matches more in depth than the other ones, is Tommy Rogers is kind of your work rate guy. Good looking dude. The only thing that was holding Tommy Rogers back was he was short, let's be honest. So Tommy Rogers in 2020 is probably a world heavyweight champion, but he was just a little dude back then. So unfortunate for him. Bobby Fulton was sort of the showman, the charisma of the team. And I think excuse me, I think they really complimented each other well. You know, I think Rogers on his own might have been a little dry. Fulton on his own maybe not as being able to keep up with the Crockett pace. So I think together, you know, they really work well with one another. And like you said, devote the whole episode to Pro, similar to how they devote the whole episode to the Rock and Roll's debut back in 1985. And they just really put – Midnights are great at this. They just bumping and stooging. And they put the Fantastics over huge in the Shine. And what you end up seeing is a pretty good Midnight Express heat segment. You know, you get the usual, and I think, like I said before, Stan Lane kind of is going to fit this a little bit better than Condry, because it is going to be more work rate oriented, more action packed. And you get this great top rope elbow. Bobby Eaton's another person who's got a great top rope elbow that gets underrated. I think, you know, Randy Savage, Shawn Michaels, Kairi Sane, all deserve it. Kairi Sane's is beautiful, but, beautiful Bobby's got a really good one too. And so, Eaton gets that kick out, which is huge, because like you said, this debuting team, it's huge to get that kick out. And then you get the Fantastics hitting the rocket launcher, which is an old Midnight Express move to win. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that, brother.
No, man, that match is a ton of fun. So my number 72, I think is where we are, is Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, and Kevin Green versus the Wolfpack, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Six. Did this one make your list?
Oh, of course it did. This is like...
Nice. I didn't know that would make your list.
I love that match.
So you got it higher?
I got it higher, brother.
Okay, so cool. We'll get to it.
We need to talk about... which one? We done 71 for me?
That's right.
It's going to be Lord Steven Regal versus Fit Finlay from Uncensored 96.
Man, that one almost made my list. It probably should have. Those guys really go at it. It's just so brutal. It probably shouldn't have made my list. And it may be one that I squeeze in after I hear you talk about it, because you'll probably get me pretty pumped up about it. But there were a couple of, I think, the other Regal match that I really wanted to squeeze in, and you may have it on your list, is one against Zbyszko. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, I do have Regal versus Zbyszko, yeah, a higher.
Oh, okay, all right. So, but anyway, yeah, this one just didn't quite make it for me. Because I had other stuff I wanted to work in and some other folks I wanted to work in, but go ahead and talk about it. This match is just super memorable if you've ever seen it.
Yeah, I think it's probably most famous for the ending where you can like literally hear Regal's nose explode, and a lot of people use literally incorrectly, but you can actually literally hear it. Like, I mean it. Like, if you pay close enough attention, you can just hear the nose get crushed by Finlay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you know what? To be honest with you, that's the finish, right? Like, they kind of just have to end it.
Yeah, because it's just, yeah, what else can you, where can you go from there?
Yeah, I think they just, I can't remember if it's a double, I don't remember what the official ruling is, I guess, is what I meant. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, because apparently they were supposed to go 30 minutes total, but they ran out of, when you get your nose smashed like that, there's not much you can do. Unless, I guess, you work for Tony Khan, I guess maybe they would have kept going. Ooh, that was a little rough. Too soon. anyways, this is the closest we probably ever got to, like, battle arts in WCW. Oh, I had this crazy dream. So, you know, not dream, but, like, you know, fantasy. This is what I fantasize about. So, you know how he was bringing in all the Lucha Libre guys? He had some Japanese guys to bring in Regal and Finlay. I would have loved Bischoff to have brought in the Rings guys. Imagine Dusty and Bobby calling a Volcan match. Oh, the pretzel references would be worth it for alone.
Yeah, that would have been interesting for sure.
That would have been tremendous. But to me, more battle arts than shoot style. And to me, the big difference is shoot style, you're going to get a lot more like takedowns. It's going to be more realistic. Battle arts with the different battle arts has shoot style elements. But what really makes battle arts is that it's just ultra violent, ultra stiff. And there's really actually not much to say about this match, because there's really not too much of a narrative, so to speak. It's just two guys beating the shit out of each other and hitting each other about as hard as you can without fucking killing the other person. So if you like that type of wrestling, which I do, it's just badass, and it feels like a fight, you know? It feels like a barroom brawl.
No doubt. They let each other have it.
Yeah.
All right. My number 71 is Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair from Bash at the Beach 1994. Do you have that one on yours?
No, that one did not make it. So go ahead and talk about
Yeah,
it.
You know, kind of similar to some of the others. It may not be, you know, a better match than some of the matches that I've already talked about as far as just a match. But, I mean, you get really sucked into the moment here. You know, you've got Hulk Hogan. You've got Ric Flair. They're having their big moment. And at the time it happened, it was WCW's biggest pay-per-view ever, obviously, when it happened. It hit 225,000 buys. And the last pay-per-view before this to hit even 200,000 buys was Great American Bash 1990. So it had been a while since they were even close to this. But, I mean, there's not much else to say. You got a monumental moment with Flair versus Hogan, and Hulk Hogan really helped turn WCW around as far as financially and their opportunities. And I think that anybody that, you know, paid for this pay-per-view and watched this match it sucked you in. It was a good match. It's a great match. So, you know, it lived up, I think, to it's probably the best match they could have had in 1994. It's really good. So that's where it is for 71 for me. And just a monumental WCW moment, I would say.
Hell yeah, brother. The only thing I'd add to that is, and actually this is a It's good timing because of what I brought up with the Pillman thing is you really see more cartoon flair here. And that's not a knock on the match. I'm just stating that, you know, we're seeing that evolution of flair. It's an interesting thing to see. Like, honestly, it was a handicap match with Sherry involved. And Sherry gets into so many spots. And Flair is doing so much cheating. And so I think you really see that sort of 90s Flair at sort of his peak, I would say, in how he's presenting himself, which is just very similar to Lawler in the 90s, who was doing a lot of Hide the Chain, which is like a, you know, sort of a stereotype of wrestling. I would say 80s Lawler, well, 80s Lawler was mostly babyface, but I would say 80s Flair was a little bit more nuanced. But here you just see 90s Flair. He's just going all in on all the stereotypes, a lot of cheating, and just a lot of that heel gaga. So what are we on, my 70, brother?
That's it.
All right, World Tag Team Champions, the Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan from Slamboree 1994.
Yeah, this one is not on my list. It was, but the match is hella fun. So you go ahead and talk about it.
It's pretty wicked. Jerry Sags is a fucking animal, baby.
Yeah.
This dude has got no regard for. Jerry Sags became one of my favorite wrestlers by rewatching a bunch of shit. He is just a wild man in there. And I was talking about Paul Orton being the sadist for Cactus Jack's masochistic fantasies. Jerry Sags is his ultimate sadist fantasy. This dude just beats the shit out of him. He loves it.
Man, yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, and they were just doing all. It was. I love when people throw shit at each other. Like, a chair shot's nice, but a chair throw, oh, that's my shit. And so there's just a lot of throwing shit at each other.
I actually think I like this one a little bit. Better than the one from is it Spring Stampede?
That's a big debate in the world. I actually like Spring.
Do you have both of them on your list?
I do have both of them on my list. I like Spring Stampede a little bit more. I think most people have kind of come around and actually say this one's the better one, but I still like the Stampede one a little bit more, but I think the energy level might be the reason why, but for me,
which one has Ventura on commentary when he's talking to Tony Schiavone and he's like I'm in tea. He says Schiavone's in tears or something like that. He's like, he's never seen a match like this that's at this pace or something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think it might be this one because I feel like Bobby's on the spring. I don't. And to be honest with you, okay. I don't remember.
I remember Ventura being on a commentary for one of them and being a lot of fun. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No worries, brother. So I think the difference is the energy level's higher in Slamboree. And also, you have a better worker in Sullivan than Max Payne. Right. But the finish, I like Spring Stampede's finish better. I thought the finish was a little flat here. That's my only thing. I think you have to have the hockey guy come in, who's like from Philadelphia. I guess it's in Philadelphia. And the hockey dude is like, I think he's too involved. It's kind of what brings it down a tad bit. But beyond that, I just think. It's a gnarly brawl. The Nasty Boys are great. I love Knobs and Sags.
Yeah, I do too. I love both of those matches. Those are matches that they were hard for me not to include. They're just a ton of fun.
I feel like Knobs and Sags, they're like the ultimate like goons or bullies. And they like should have like they always kind of like reminded me of like, and I don't even know if this is true because, like, I'm just based on childhood. But in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, do they ever fight, like, warthogs? I feel like they should be the warthogs. Or is it the Power Rangers? Anyways, they seem like cartoon characters. Well,
they're Bebop and Rocksteady, man.
Who's this? Is this I'm really not into
Ninja
cartoons.
Turtles, yeah. Bebop
this is Ninja
and Rocksteady.
Turtles. I was right, so I
yeah.
was right.
Yeah, yeah. I, Rocksteady's I, like the rhino, and Bebop is the, like, the Yeah, the warthog with like the nose ring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't you feel like Brian Knobs and Jerry Sags kind of like?
Yeah, Bebop. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. What's your 70, brother?
My number 70 is from Spring Stampede 94. Did Flair and Steamboat from Stampede 94 make your list?
Brother, it's at 69.
Whoa. There you go.
You got to have a flair match in 69, brother.
I tell you what, before I submit mine, I will swap out my 69 and 70. I'll just trade them. That's one change you've already convinced me to make. So when we get to my 69, just for future reference, it will be 70.
To be honest with you, I didn't even notice that until I said it out loud. I didn't even know that I had a player match at 69, but it's too perfect. So I have the same match, so we can talk about it. Why don't you start, brother?
Well, I'll just say, since we're talking about it, I mean, Spring Stampede 94, right? It's one of the best top-to-bottom WCW shows around that time.
Hell yeah, brother.
I remember going to Suncoast, which was a big VHS store for those that didn't shop for VHS back in the around 1995 or 96 or so. But they always had this one in stock. And it was one that I picked up from there. And that was the first time that I saw it, was when I bought the tape from Suncoast. But, you know, it's an excellent match. It's hard fought. It's energetic. You get these two guys in the ring. It's always a classic. This is the first entrant that I have from these guys, but obviously there's going to be more. There's some great, the chop exchanges, high spots, near falls, you know, it's classic. It's Ric Flair. It's Ricky Steamboat. So this one's at number 70 for me. There's another one coming up from close around this time that's a little bit higher for me. So, but this one's certainly a great match.
Yeah, I agree with this. I think this is sort of their, I think that a lot of it is because it's 94, right? It's 5 years after 89. They kind of do this really nice greatest hits match. It's very nostalgic. It feels really good. You feel safe and at home when you watch Flair versus Steamboat. And it's just, you know, like you said, they just rip into each other with the usual cracks of the chops. And you get a lot of those nice Flair tropes. And actually, Flair's a babyface at this time. So this is face versus face, and you get a lot more, it's a lot, like I said, a lot less cheating than the other 90s Flair matches. It's more of a traditional 80s Flair match, and I think it's a good Flair match for people who just kind of want to get a feel for Flair if they, I mean, to say you're not used to Flair, I mean, but there's people out there who I guess probably haven't watched that much Flair. This is a good place to start, I would imagine. You know, it's just... it's, you know, the idea is, and I think a key element of Flair psychology is sort of haste makes waste, in the way that it works against him. I'm not saying he uses haste makes waste to create offense. What he does is he moves too fast and he ends up getting fucked over by it. So if he just takes a deep breath, he'd probably be better for it, but count backwards from 10. But instead, he usually just runs desperate headlong into something and then gets fucked. You know, so that I think that it shows that nice element of Flair. You know, you get the big high spots, you know, the top rope superplex at the end, the double chicken wing, which is called back to Clash 6. And we get the bridge thing and then the title being held up. So that leads to the Saturday night rematch. So I think it served its purpose. It was and I think Flair, it was really nice that they had the opportunity to do this before Hogan came in. It's just kind of a nice way to end WCW. I think a lot of people, even though obviously retaining the name, that WCW was, you know, was forever changed when Hogan came in. So this was sort of like, you know, a nice little send off for the WCW fans.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think my number 69. Which will now be 70 because I will make the switch, is one that you mentioned earlier on, which is the Sting, Steamboat, Wyndham, Dustin versus Arn, Rude, Eaton, and Larry Zbyszko from 2/22/92.
Yes, I did mention that before.
Yeah, so just super awesome match. The heels were really great. I really loved like the Dustin and Arn pairing.
Oh yeah, they are always great together.
Yeah. You got Steamboat in there. There's also I was checking out like some other people's thoughts on this match, and there's if anybody wants to look it up, there's I think on PWO is KB8, I believe.
Oh, yeah, he wrote a really extensive.
Yeah, he's got a big, extensive review on this on the Whiskey and Wrestling blog. So, you know, plug for that blog if you want to go check out a write-up on this match. But anyway, it's just a super fun match. This is a great time for WCW as far as in-ring action. You know, Rude's in his prime. The crowd is super hot for Sting, which, you know, I'm a big Sting fan, so works for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad that Rude and Sting never got that, like, really, you know, that big time singles main event, because they really were building to it, it felt like, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I used to have a poster of Sting and Rude in my room at some point. But yeah, they never really got to have that classic.
No, yeah, which is unfortunate because, yeah, I mean, the Clash, whichever it was, where Sting has to come back from the ambulance, it's actually a really fun angle. It's more of an angle than a match. But yeah, it's too bad they never got to have that that match. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head for the most part. For me, the standouts were Dustin, in terms of being facing peril. I think if Ricky Morton never existed in this world, which would be a sad world if Ricky Morton never existed, but if he didn't, I think we'd be talking about Dustin Rhodes as the greatest face in peril of all time. And on the heel side of things, I thought Larry Zbysko was on fire in this, bumping and stooging and just awesome verbal selling.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And really good Dangerous Alliance offense. You know, Rude had a missile dropkick. Arn had the DDT, Eden figure four, just good stuff. The fun fact about if you ever watch it, the sort of the trope of the Dangerous Alliance is that Eden will hit a Alabama Jam out of nowhere. And so this time around, the babyfaces turn it against him. They end up isolating Larry Zbysko, and Ricky Steamboat hits a top rope crossbody out of nowhere, and that wins the match. So good babyface victory for the against the Dangerous Alliance. All right,
I think you're on 68
is TV champion Steve Regal versus the living legend Larry Zbysko, May 28th, 1994.
Yeah, this is that other one I was telling you about that I really wanted to try to fit on here and just didn't get to, but it's awesome. Go for it.
All right, let me they had a whole slew of matches in 1994. And actually some of them are going to be a little hard to find, but mostly it's Larry Zbysko as a babyface, which is pretty rare. He was a commentator, and Regal was just being a douchebag in general. And so Larry Zbysko came out of retirement, I think at Slamboree, which is about a week prior. So the match really centered around sort of the aspect of pride and winning, you know, and because Zbysko had already shown up for Regal. So now Regal kind of not only has to win the match, but he needs to humiliate Larry Zbysko. But now that Larry Z's the babyface, he just comes out really hot. And it's just and what's funny is there's no stalling. All of it, you know, Larry Zbysko's babyface, so there's no stalling. He's just out there to kick ass. And the cravats are great. I mean, the wrestling is just so good. It's just everything is just dripping with struggle. There's the European uppercut. So you get good strikes. You get good submissions. You know, and what's fun is that the heel believes he's the best pure technical wrestler. And Larry Zbysko is showing that he's not, if not just as good, maybe even better. And you see Regal kind of having to come to grips with this. Like, that's, you know, that's a heavy thing. It's not only is Larry Zbysko beating him, he's beating him in his own game, which can be a tough thing for somebody to swallow. There's great struggle over butterfly suplex. There's a really cool, this is the move I remember the most, is there's like a standing reverse figure four. I don't know how else to describe it. That's just wicked awesome that somebody needs to steal. It's from Zbysko. So Regal has tried wrestling. He's tried the rough housing. And this is what I love about wrestling, is what I'm talking about is different strategies. And I think we'll see that with Flair as we progress, is Regal tried the wrestling. He got out wrestled. He tried rough housing. It didn't work for him. Now he's just going to try cheating. And that's great. It's just a natural progression of being a heel. You get more and more desperate. You resort to drastic measures. And at the end of the day, you're an insecure, good-for-nothing prick. And so that's why you go to cheating. The babyface wouldn't do that. And so we get Regal headbutting in the ropes, and the TV show goes off the air. And so we have to go to next week for the conclusion of the match. If you do that, you know, it wouldn't work now with the world of spoilers, but – it was a good way, I guess. It was like to be continued for people who used to watch. Do they still do that on shows? I don't even know, but it was a popular thing when in the 90s when I was a kid. So anyways, they get a sleeper and Zabisco pushes Dundee off and lands on top of Regal for the win. So it's that old sleeper bridge thing. So it was a very personal match. I love the competitive spirit of the match, and it really meant both a lot to both wrestlers who was the best wrestler. So very fun.
Oh yeah, for sure. And my number 68, I don't know if you might have this one higher, I'm not sure, but it's one of my favorite feuds from WCW. It's Diamond Dallas Page versus Randy Savage from Great American Bash 1997.
I do have one of their matches, but I don't have that one. So go ahead and give it a whirl.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think this one was maybe a little bit. As far as just the match itself, it might be a little bit more entertaining than the Spring Stampede match, but I didn't find it as like as consistent as far as just maintaining that. Well, we'll get into the Spring Stampede match later, but I didn't find it as consistent as that one. And the finish, really isn't as good either. Obviously, like the big finish comes in Spring Stampede, but if you watch all their matches in order, which I did, this one to me is kind of just the one in the middle. So the finish really isn't there for me to kind of put it above Spring Stampede, and we'll talk about Halloween Havoc
Isn't
later too.
this, wasn't this like when I was a kid? I remember this being billed as a lights out match. And you know what I literally thought a lights out match was? I thought the lights were out and they wrestled in the dark.
Well, I get them kind of a little bit confused because they're all, I think I'm not sure, but maybe the lights out match is the Spring Stampede one. But I
No,
mean,
Spring Stampede is the.
all three of them, they can go all over the place.
Right. I think they're all no disqualification. I thought
Right.
this one, they don't have to respond to a count of 10. Or do they ever do that gimmick? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that's the Halloween Havoc one.
I see. I see. Something like that. What kind
Either
of a gimmick?
way,
I didn't.
I like all three of their matches. They're a lot of fun. It's a really great feud. It's kind of the,
Oh, this is the one with Scott Hall. Yes, it's Scott Hall.
yeah. The finish has the Scott Hall finish. Yep.
I liked Scott Hall and Randy Savage as a pairing. It's like a weird pairing. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, Savage and Elizabeth at this time was just on fire.
Yeah, for sure. Number 67.
Yes, my 67 is it's one you talked about earlier. It's Flair, Piper, and Kevin Green versus the Wolfpack.
Oh man, super fun.
Oh, this is like the feel good match of the century. If you're feeling blue, turn this one on, baby. It's in Charlotte, right? Yeah, it's definitely in Charlotte. It's Flair's return match from his shoulder surgery, and the Nash Hall and Six just go out of their way to just bump and sell and stooge for the baby faces, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, I was going to share that Waltman was on the Talk Is Jericho podcast in December of 2016, and he talked about how they really wanted to be like the Freebirds. And he said that Flair initially didn't want him in the match, and that they, which Piper and Flair, wanted Hogan instead at first. And he said that he and Flair had serious heat going into the match, and he thought Flair was trying to freeze him out of the main event. And so he shoot slapped Flair on live TV, and he was pushed by Flair leading up to that. And then he said that Flair was killing him on the mic, so the only thing he needed to do was to slap the taste out of his mouth. So Flair
Yeah.
chased him around the ring, and he ran away, and he thought they were going to fight, but Flair told him he loved it backstage.
I think I heard that story, I think maybe on Austin's show too. It's a great story, and I'm glad Flair came around to it eventually.
Yeah, but anyway, like you said, this match is just a ton of fun. If anybody, I feel like this could be a match that, like, if you were a fan of it at the time, or if you just you may have forgotten how good it really is, or if you're a fan coming into it now and you look back and you see like, oh, Kevin Green, that can't be too great. It's a lot of fun. It's one you should definitely check out if you haven't seen it before.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Flair's performance is worth it. Kevin Green's great. I mean, for a football player, he's fine. He's a good powerhouse. Like I said, I mean, really, I mean, even Nash does a pretty good job because, like, you don't think of Nash as really a bumping heel, but Hall and Six go out of their way to make these three look. Piper is, I like Piper, but Piper in his WCW run, for the most part, like, I think really wasn't that good. And he looked good in this match. And I thought the finish was just absolutely raucous. So
yeah, they give them the big finish, you know.
Yeah.
In the NWO, they give the fans what they want on that night.
Exactly, and I think that's what I was talking about when I was talking about the '97 being so immaculately booked. They had these like nice little babyface hope spots throughout the year, built into the Hogan Sting thing. So, and this was just another one. You know, they had the Spring Stampede, they had Luger's win over Hogan. This had nice, you know. They had a lot of good, like, underlying stories. It was a really well-booked year.
Yeah, I think I noted that Flair picked up the pinfall in Hall while in a figure four leg lock, while Piper had Nash in a sleeper hold.
Right, yeah. They all like, hit their finish simultaneously or so. Yeah, it was good. What do you have? What number are we at?
I think I'm at 67. Yeah. So this is one that I recommend the Carolina Dreamin' podcast for if you haven't listened to it, and it's the Roddy Piper versus Jack Briscoe from 7/7/82.
Seven. Oh yes, I know he was talking about that. I know I saw Briscoe versus, I think I saw Piper versus Youngblood. I don't think I've seen this one yet, so go ahead for it.
No, yeah, just basically Piper giving him a masterful performance here. Chad talked about it a lot in his podcast, but there's just like a lot of basic moves, but the struggle is just so awesome.
The struggle is real, brother.
Yeah. And I, you know, when I was watching, I was like, God, you know, I wish. And like you said before, I'm not trying to slam on today's wrestling at all, because I love wrestling, you know, today's wrestling too. But just that's something I don't see as much. I don't feel like it's just that kind of struggle and logic that's applied to, and I wish it was, you know, applied a little bit more frequently in wrestling now, how everything kind of counts. And I don't know. It's like no matter what, at any moment in time, they're not trying to put on a big finishing move to win the match. They're not, you know, every moment that they're going at it, they're trying to win. You know, there's not, yeah, you know, so it's not a setup. It's a fight, and it's a super entertaining match. And like I said, it's a Piper Mid-Atlantic title versus Jack Briscoe, $10,000 studio match. So, you know, if you like that kind of stuff, check it out. And also, Chad really breaks it down in the Carolina Dreamin', so I would definitely recommend listening to that too. But I love Roddy Piper, and I really love Roddy Piper during this era of his career. You know, I love his Portland stuff a lot. Big fan of Piper in Portland. Big fan of Piper and Valentine, which we'll get to later. But if there's, you know, we just talked about the Piper match from 97, but yeah, for anybody out there, go check out Piper's early stuff when he was just a brawling, healing, awesome wrestler. I mean, he's one of the goats for sure. Top five for me. He's a top five guy for me, no doubt.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing I found out last night. I was going down the championship wrestling from Florida rabbit hole. And I just decided to do this thing. I was like, I'm going to look up what the main events were from around the country for Thanksgiving of 82, Christmas 82, Thanksgiving 83, Christmas 83. And what's really super interesting to me was Mid-Atlantic, both the Thanksgiving and the Christmas show for 82, was headlined by Roddy Piper. He was the semi-main on the Thanksgiving 83 show, which was Starrcade 83. And he was the main event on Christmas Day 83. Everyone thinks Piper, you know, they think WWF. If you don't think WWF, you think Portland. Well, let me tell you something, brother. He was the man in Mid-Atlantic. You don't main event the four biggest shows of the year, two biggest shows of the year back-to-back without being the man. So, I mean, that speaks volumes to me, you know, that he got over in the Carolinas. So. A big deal.
Yeah, man, if you haven't seen this one, go for it. You'll be glad you checked it out.
Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely make the time for it. Actually, I think what I want to do is I'm going to try to watch all the Mid-Atlantic Championship. Probably not for the project, but it's something I want to do is watch all the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. I'm going to try to also watch Georgia Championship Wrestling from YouTube and Championship Wrestling from Florida and kind of get that feel from the Southeast, because I think it kind of they all kind of go hand in hand together. So number 66 for me is – I can't remember if you have this already or if it's going to be higher – There's no doubt in my mind you got it somewhere. It's Halloween Havoc 1998. It's WCW champion Goldberg versus Diamond Dallas Page.
You're right. It is on my list, but it is higher.
Yeah, as it should be.
And then my number 66 is one that you mentioned earlier. It's the Steiners versus Sting and Luger.
Oh yeah, that's good fun. Go for it.
Yeah, 5/19/91 at the inaugural Super Brawl.
Yep, Super Brawl numero uno.
Yeah, St. Petersburg, Florida. The 1991 Pro Wrestling Illustrated Match of the Year.
Oh really?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good pick for them. I wouldn't be surprised if Meltzer thought it was the best match of all time. It seems right up his alley.
Well, what I remember most about the match is basically just like, obviously it's Sting and Luger and the Steiners. And it's just them putting on a fun match for the fans. Like, just a lot of big bombs, you know, it's the Steiners. That's basically kind of what I remember about it, is just how fun it was. It's kind of like a sprint. You know,
it's a big, dumb, fun match, brother.
Yeah. Just
overthink this one. You know, I'm talking. just smile. Yeah. I mean, this is, the Steiners at their best. It's just four big dudes just, you know, throwing each other around. I thought Sting was king size in this. That out of control splash that he hits.
Yeah.
Wild. I love Rick Steiner.
It's four huge faces too, right? Like,
massive faces. There's a Luger-Rick Steiner match that I've never seen that I got to see. Because the Luger-Rick Steiner pairing at the beginning of this match is just aces.
Yeah.
Way he bounces off of Luger, the German suplex. I mean, Scotty Steiner was raring to go. You know, this is the type of match that makes me proud to be a Wolverine. You know? So, let's go Steiners. Let's go Blue, baby. It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine.
Doesn't it? Luger hit Steiner with that lariat.
Yes, that was a pretty big spot. Yeah, yeah, the ultimate finish was the whole Nikita thing, which, you know what, and again, I think this goes back to what I was talking about. It's not easy to book wrestling. It was four big baby faces. You weren't going to get a clean finish, nor should you. So,
I think we're at year 65, man.
All right, brother. This is Fall Brawl 97. We're talking about the Cruiserweight Champion, Chris Jericho, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He's a baby face in this match, and he's taking on Eddie Guerrero, who's just turned heel. He's a very, very scuzzy, sleazy heel.
Yeah, so this one didn't make it for me, but it was kind of the, I picked between this one and the one that we talked about earlier with Jericho and Guerrero versus the Faces of Fear, and I elected to get Ming on my list, so go for it.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, you know. I mean, obviously,
I rewatch it, to be honest with you, so maybe it's one I need to rewatch before I turn my list in. I remembered liking it, and in my mind I felt like it may have been just a tad better than that tag match on Nitro. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wanted to work everybody in that was in the tag match onto the list, so I kind of just went ahead and put it just a little bit higher. But I do remember it standing out as a great match for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for Barbarian love, brother. I mean, he doesn't get enough time, so I mean, anything to get Barbarian, throwing Barbarian a bone, I'm all for. I don't think Jericho is a great character in WCW. I mean, this is the only time I'm going to talk about Jericho, so I'll just talk about it. Jericho is the first person to ever make me swear. I was 9, 8 years old at the time. I said Jericho sucks. My mother was not too happy about this. Almost banned wrestling again. You know, that crazy Chris Jericho. But my parents loved Chris Jericho. They thought he was great. They thought the Jerichoholic thing was just the best thing in wrestling. They're still Jericho fans to this day. Lifelong Jerichoholics. We're happy they still in wrestling. And the whole 98 character was great. I will say this. I don't actually think he was that great in WCW from a work rate perspective. I think he was better in his own mind than he actually was. He usually bit off more than he could chew type thing. But Eddie was just so on fire in late 1997. Eddie found his voice, found his personality, the mullet, the mustache, looking evil, that sneer. Oh, that sneer was perfect. What was I going to say? So the sneer was perfect, and I think what he did was he really reined Jericho in and made him have a match that just really was psychologically sound and really just built to a finish. You had the Jericho have a nice babyface shine, get caught by a nefarious Eddie Guerrero tactic, and then that Eddie Guerrero set heat segment's wicked hot, and then it's just that wild, crazy finish of bombs for 1997 that was just so perfect. Really makes the Cruiserweight title feel important, and I really like the finish was Jericho hits his double powerbomb spot, which was what he would do in WCW. Didn't do it too much later on, and then goes for a top rope superplex. Eddie counters the move mid-move, which didn't look too great. Kind of looked like he was taking a brain buster, but it was countered and then hit the frog splash. So it was just this great chain reaction of bomb throwing, and he pays the Jericho pays the price for the high risk move. Eddie capitalizes, so it's a great match for sure.
Yeah, back in this time we had the had a satellite dish in my house, and I can remember when this pay-per-view came on, and I remember if you I don't did you I don't know if you ever had a satellite dish, but you could try to like, so I didn't rent the pay-per-view. I don't know if my parents, I don't know what the story is there, but I didn't rent it, but I really wanted to see it really bad. And if you could move the satellite dish to like the east or to the west of the pay-per-view feed, and then you could sort of see it scrambled. So, and then you could hear the commentary. So I remember going to like the pay-per-view channel and taking my satellite dish and like moving it to the east or west or something like manually. And then I remember listening to Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Jericho, like the commentary, and then watching these like scrambled moves. And
That's
also, yeah, and then I came back to it. I don't think I watched like I didn't sit there for like the whole thing, but I had it on, and I remember like listening to the Guerrero Jericho match. Because I loved Jericho and WCW, like you mentioned. I kind of wanted to just put that Cruiserweight Battle Royal on the list just because of the moment where Dean Malenko reveals himself
Yes.
under the mask as Ciclope or whatever. I almost like wanted to put that at 100. That's like another one that I thought about for like 100, just because of that moment. And of course, like him calling out all the luchadors and stuff as they come out to the ring for that battle, for the Cruiserweight Battle Royal. But anyway, love Jericho. Watched that match on Scramble. He was a great character. His WCW run is awesome.
Yeah, for sure, and and like you said, I mean that's heel Jericho, and then this is we still get a good match out of babyface Jericho, so it's a good mix for him. So we'll move on to your 60. Yep, we're on number 65 now. Go ahead, brother.
All right, Dustin Rhodes versus Vader, Clash of the Champions, 11/16/1994.
This is higher for me, my man.
I figured it would be. It's awesome. But go ahead.
It's a ton of fun. It's a little, you know what? It's really highly rated on that Smart Choice Top 100.
Where
I
did it
hope it
place
gets
on
one.
that?
I want to say top 30. Maybe it definitely
Yeah.
top 50. Yeah, it's pretty. For a match that doesn't get much fanfare outside of that list, it did pretty well. Number 64 for me is one that you've already mentioned, is from Saturday Night, June 6, 1992. It's Arn Anderson versus Barry Windham for the TV title. Why don't
Yeah.
you go first?
Well, my memories of this one are just like how much of an athletic competition it felt like.
Yes.
You talked about in your review of a match, I can't remember which one it was now, another Wyndham match. So just kind of like your meat and potatoes, like they're just going at it. Classic wrestling. That's just kind of that's how I remember it. And I just remember them. It just felt like an athletic sports based, this is a wrestling match. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, to me, I think I agree with all those things. I think that's definitely what makes Anderson and Wyndham great. And I think what makes this match uniquely great is it's 2 out of 3 falls. I don't know if we mentioned that. And the first and second fall, what they do really well is they set up payoffs down the line, and then they pay it off at the end of the fall. So it's you know, like Barry Wyndham has to overcome a lot of work, and then, you know, hits this flying lariat for the first fall, and then the second fall, you know, you get the spine buster for Arn, which usually doesn't win him the match. That's so personally, I like 2 out of 3 falls matches more, because then you get to see Matt moves that should be finishes really become finishes, and you get to see heels actually win with their finish as opposed to not always win. So I think, and then I think you can tell a nice overarching story. You can, and like I say at some point, that you can work the body part to its logical conclusion, where you can't always do that in a conventional match. Like if you work a body part to lead to the first fall victory, you don't necessarily need that babyface comeback. You can just have the heel win the first fall. Not that it happened in this match. I'm just saying what the benefits are of a 2 out of 3 falls match. Third fall is just more of your bomb throwing big finish, and so I think they just do a really nice job in just sort of telling that story throughout the three falls. And I just like 2 out of 3 falls wrestling.
Yeah, I think it was it's one of those that probably had it, or if I felt like it, you know, maybe carried a little bit more weight or something like that, it probably could have placed a little bit higher for me too, because just the match itself is awesome.
Yeah, there's just there is a really good rhythm to it, I would say.
Yeah. All right, my number 64. This one's on the Hidden Gems section of the network for anybody that's interested. It's the Steamboat and, well, you may have this, so I'll see. But Steamboat and Youngblood versus the Briscoe Brothers from 7/9/83.
No, and I watched the Flair Race match and the Valentine Piper match, but I don't know if I watched that one yet. So I'll watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was this was their feud coming out of the Slaughter, Cronulla match, or the feud that they had with them. Yeah. Basically it's like, Steamboat and Youngblood are, you know, looking for the tag gold as they're heading into Starrcade, and Briscoes are like super cocky. I remember the crowd reaction at the end. there's some guy that's just like shouting, "They gonna keep them belts," or something like that. The crowd is like super fun for this one too. You know, yeah, the Briscoes come out. They're really cocky, like I said. They work over Youngblood's back pretty violently throughout the match. There's like a slingshot suplex where they hit Youngblood's back on the ropes and his legs bend over backwards, which just looks brutal. Did you say you'd seen this one?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. So they get him with a slingshot suplex, and then when his back hits the ropes on that slingshot, though, his legs are like draped over and he's bent over. He's like, basically looks like a pretzel. They keep Youngblood cornered. Their offense is big. It's animated. The folks in the back row, you know, it's probably easy for them to get pretty into it. Yeah, Steamboat's hot tag per usual is really awesome. So it's just a really fun, awesome match with the Briscoes cheating for the win.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you have 2 Jack Briscoe matches on your list. He's definitely somebody I want to watch more of. I watched a really good Jack, this almost completely off topic, but there's a really good Jack Briscoe versus Antonio Inoki match. I think it's from 69 or 71. Totally doesn't have anything to do with this project, but it's a great Jack Briscoe match. And I think that's somebody I really want to explore more. I think I just really would enjoy him. He really has that sportsman element to him.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he ends up working heel with his brother towards the end. So, and they have a good match in WWF together against Murdoch and Adonis. So, yeah, no, it's definitely something I will make a point to check out. Hopefully before December 31st.
Yeah, man, for sure. You should check that one out. I think, you're at 63.
Yep. So this is world champion Ric Flair versus Brian Pillman. from Saturday night, February 17th, 1990. So it sounded like you didn't have either one of these, right?
Yeah, I didn't have either one, but I think this is the one that was the hardest for me to cut, though.
Yeah, no, I think it's the one people tend to like a little bit more. It has a little bit more. It's at a point where the promotion is doing a little bit better, and also has a little bit more story to it. So basically, Flair has just turned on Sting. He's become heel, and so Brian Pillman, who's one of Sting's buddies, you know, he's just a mid-card babyface. He's got a lot of righteous indignation towards Flair. He's pissed about it. He wants to kick his ass for it. Hey, who blames him? So, yeah, it's just a great sprint. This is very much in the mold of Flair versus Garvin. You know, just an ass-kicking, trade the leather, smack each other around. And it's different than the 91 match where Flair's doing a lot more of that jaw-jacking and cheating. This is just Flair going toe-to-toe with the babyface, kicking ass, taking names. And I think this is, like I said, this is one element of Flair that we'll talk about, is just this sort of like crazed look in his eye. He's going to give as good as he gets type person, which I don't think people talk about a lot. You know, most people think of Flair begging off. And I'm sure he begged off maybe once or twice in this match. But for the most part, he was standing right up there and smacking him just as good as he was getting smacked. And the babyface comeback climaxed really nicely with Eric Pillman. Which was this nice pop. He doesn't get the win, of course, because, you know, Flair's the real is the champion. Pillman's just mid-carder. And Flair rolls through with a crossbody, grabs some tights. So it's just this really nice TV sprint. It's perfect for what you want, you know, the world champion going up against the hot, young mid-card babyface.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like I said before, it's the what stands out most in my memory about that match is the chops back and forth.
Oh, yeah, they were brutal.
Yeah. My number 63, I don't know if you have this or not, is Nikita Koloff versus Tully Blanchard from 1987.
Oh, is this the TV title switch?
It's from Super Bout 7. I remember that Nikita has enough time. He grabs the brass knucks and gets Tully with him for the pin. The crowd goes crazy. I can't remember if there's if it's for a title or not off the top of my head. I've only seen this one once, but I really
I haven't watched. I wrote this down as one that I should watch, but I haven't gotten around to watching it yet. So break it down for me.
Well, I mean, basically, that's what I remember is the ending for the ending there. But on top of that, you've just got, you know, Nikita, you got Tully basically bouncing around for Nikita, which is, you know, Tully doing his thing, which is awesome. I remember when I got the recommendation for this one from Will's post over on PWO, and he put on in his little review of it that Tully is like constantly squirming and moving and trying to find ways to escape, and that stands out for me there too. But it's just a really fun match, and Will noted on his review, he said it's about as good as any Nikita singles match you'll ever find. I don't know if that's exactly the case, because I don't know that I've really fully explored Nikita Koloff. But I will say that I've said from the beginning, that of all the folks that I watched matches for the first time over the past year or whatever, Tully is the person that I always knew I liked Tully Blanchard. And most of the matches I had seen from him were probably more tag matches. And so this I really kind of dove into the Tully singles matches for this, and I'm glad I did, because he climbed the charts for me, as you could say, is one of my favorite wrestlers, watching him here. And as Will noted in his write up, just him squirming around, and Will put, see how he worded it. He bumps like a pinball for Nikita's power moves.
Oh yeah.
I would say that's definitely the case. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something I'll check out. You know, I've been binging on The Horseman pretty hard, and I just didn't get to the, I think it was recommended somewhere else, but I haven't gotten to it yet. But sounds fun.
It is.
All right, so 61, brother, for me is the Miracle Violence Connection. Oh, sorry, I'm at 62. I skipped one. 62, sorry, is Randy Savage versus Diamond Dallas Page from Spring Stampede 1997.
Yeah, so I do have that one higher.
Okay. All right. What's your 62?
My 62, you already had on your list. It is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes, Great American Bash 1986 Steel Cage. Well, for me, you know, they've got a lot of matches. This one is my, I guess there's a little bit of a spoiler here. It's my second favorite of all. It's my second favorite of their matches. I felt like the Dusty was just killing it here. I mean, he's just doing his thing, you know, he's doing the Dusty thing. He's doing his little moves and the things that he does. But, I don't know. I just really enjoyed watching Dusty Rhodes perform in this match, I guess is the best way to put it. I really wanted to have some Dusty stuff on here too, of course. And this one kind of stood out to me.
Yeah, no, this is my only Flair versus Dusty. It is my favorite of their, of the bunch that they had. Like you said, there is a lot of them. I think what it's just the feel-good moment of sort of the Crockett, you know, it's the climax, right?
Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah, because he wins here.
Right, he wins the title. It, you know, they had the big leg break in the lead-up to Starrcade 85. So it's just, it's sort of to me, this is Crockett at its zenith. You know, one thing we haven't brought up that I wanted to bring up was – in All Japan in the 90s, a very similar way, is how well they maximized having a small roster and getting the most out of it. When you think about it, the babyfaces were Dusty, Magnum, Garvin, Rock and Rolls, and Road Warriors. Okay, so that's 3 + 4 = 7. Heels are the Four Horsemen, the Koloffs, and Midnight Express. So that's 8. 15 people. Now, obviously, they had undercard workers, and I'm sure there's some Boogie Woogie fans out there, but, you know. Who cares really at the end of the day? 15 guys and they kicked ass with them, and they worked all those different combinations throughout the Great American Bash. They paired up every single one of them differently, and it was just superb. It was so much fun. And anyway, so like I said, this is just the zenith of Crockett, and it's just Dusty getting that win. And you didn't need to have a long Dusty reign. I think 2 weeks is a little short, but right. The most important part was the victory, and the victory was great. And like you said, I think to me, I've seen a lot of Flair Dusty matches. They don't. Let's see. The thing for me is kind of like Flair has a lot of offense, especially in the 80s. But he likes to not have to use it until the middle section of the match. Dusty doesn't have a lot of offense, so it tends to not work out. Is why I kind of don't usually – they don't work for me. But this match is great because Flair really works overtime to make Dusty look like $1 million. Like Flair tries every trick in the book to try to get one over on Dusty, and then Dusty just overcomes it and it looks awesome. And the steel cage was used very well. They did the whole moon over Miami thing that Flair loves to do, showing some ass literally. And then you get the big Dusty comeback. He draws the blow. Oh, we get the double juice. And it's just and it's a great moment. You know, you just feel like, the American dream. My man, he takes the cake.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and share my number 61 just because it kind of flows right out of this because it is my favorite of the Dusty Flair matches.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's Dusty versus Flair from Pro, 8/23/86.
Oh, so this is when Tully broke the leg or he'd already
broken like the leg. Week before he injured it with the chair.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And I guess the reason why I like this one so much is just the story of it. It's like I know that like Dusty, from what I understand, is a big fan of like Westerns. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's kind of like his like gunslinger. It's like because he comes into town and he's got the wounded leg. Right. And so he's on his injured leg. He's trying to be on offense. And then you got the baby doll turn.
I know. The disappointing thing with the baby doll train is because I grew to love baby doll. I've always kind of liked baby doll, but like this past rewatch, I've become a big baby doll fan. And this is it. Like pretty much she has like a couple promos with Flair for a month, and then she gets shipped off to Central States with her
Yeah.
lover Sam Houston.
Have you seen this match, or just have you just
No,
seen?
no, I've seen the match. It is a great match.
Yeah, it's cool. I think the story of it just kind of, I think the story of it just, pulled me in just a little bit and made the match just a little bit more interesting, I guess, or a little bit more fun to me than the others, I guess. I like the idea of just of Dusty sort of. I don't know. I've got this whole thing in my head where he's the gunslinger. He's like the wounded. I think he was a big John Wayne fan. That's like showing up into town with his, he's got a gunshot in his leg, and he's gonna take on the bad guys,
Actually, a cool moment that I had forgotten, I was just like looking through my review, is Dusty had Flair in the figure four, and Dusty you and Flair actually punched Dusty's bad knee while Dusty had him in the figure four as a way to break it. That's pretty cool.
Oh
Pretty cool.
yeah, that I remember that too. Yeah, that was a
It's
cool
pretty
moment.
sweet.
Yep.
But yeah, the baby doll turn's a big deal. Like you said, Tully Blanchard introduced like the week before. Yeah, I think one thing, and I forgot to mention this, is something I sort of realized watching this a lot is, and I use this term, is Flair really is good at selling the route. Like the route is on, the baby face, like if wrestling was scored like a basketball game, like he'd be down 20-2 right at the start. You know what I'm talking about? Like a big break
Yeah.
for the And Flair has to come back. So I think he sells it. He sells being overwhelmed really well throughout.
Yeah, where did you find the full version of this match? Because the one on the network is clipped. Somebody asked me about it on the Facebook group, which I actually joined Facebook just to check out this group because I don't really have a real
Oh,
Facebook.
I see.
but yeah, they where did you find the full match?
I'm pretty sure our good friend from Texas has it in full. I
Yeah.
definitely watched it in full.
Okay, that's how I watched it too. I was just curious for anybody out there that wanted to check it out. I mean, you could see the finish of it on the network for sure.
Yeah, I think my solution is if people feel like they can't find the match, try searching for the episode of the show it's on. And sometimes people upload the entire show, but the
Yep.
search engine won't pull the match because it's not listed. So
Yep.
that's my
Pro tip.
next that's my Google pro tip for anyone. Never give up, keep searching. It's usually on Chinese YouTube. Actually, it was the Chinese YouTube was pretty Russian YouTube was wicked good for a while, but then they kind of pulled everything. RuTube. Anyways, see, that was your 61. We did a little
Yeah,
flip
so
flop and
yeah,
fly, bro.
I flip-flopped there, so you go ahead and knock out your 61 and 60.
All right, let's do that. Okay, so 61 is the Miracle Violence Connection, Dr. Death and Terry Gordy versus the Steiner Brothers from Clash of the Champions 19.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so this is, to me, this is what Bill Watts kind of had in mind. It just didn't really work out all the time, but it's, I think the more as I'm going through my list, I didn't even realize it while I was putting it together, but I think I really only have two styles of matches. I have Ric Flair matches and like four big ugly dudes throwing each other around. Those are my two styles that I enjoy, apparently. Yeah, so I love power wrestling. I think probably the that's like even though I grew up in the 90s and like was, brainwashed into believing like Benoit, brainwashed is a little strong, but the whole Benoit work rate thing was God, and that's how wrestling should be. I think I always liked power wrestling, and now I just feel more confident in what I like, and just like hell yeah, brother. People being 300 pounds and jacked is a great thing. So, and the best part of this is Gordy is not amateur, or at least I don't think he has an amateur background. He keeps up just fine. But you get the Boomer Sooner against the two Michigan Wolverines, and it is just like. This is like, it's odd, baby. Like, it's fucking hooked up and it's great. Like, the wrestling is just so good in this. Like, it's wrestling. Like, I always think it's really funny when today's fans are like, "Oh, this is wrestling and it's a bunch of gymnastics." No, brothers. This is wrestling. So I just I love this. And I mean, really, to me, it's just a kind of a blur of just awesomeness and people just throwing people around. I'm trying to think of anything I truly like remember, but yeah, I just remember just everyone was beating the crap out of each other. Like, eventually they go from throws to just wailing on each other. There's some great Steiner lines. I guess the finish was they keep clipping Scotty's knee and they clip it right as he's doing a suplex and they end up winning. So they kind of just went after Scotty's knee. But yeah, it was a great confluence of amateur wrestling and power wrestling that just came together. It was just very explosive. Good stuff.
Yeah, I remember that one being a lot of fun too. I didn't get a chance to watch it any time recently, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. What's your next one?
Oh, so yeah, I'm going back to my next one. So my next one is actually, I think it's a little under the radar. A lot of people don't talk about it. I think it's because the rematch is super famous. It's US champion Rick Rude versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat from Super Brawl 2.
I have that one higher.
Oh, good for you, man.
It's a good one.
You're the man.
All right, so my number is 60. I think you had it. I don't remember where you had it, but Raging Eruption versus Rock and Roll Express from 12/6/86.
Yeah,
This
I
is
think I had a 81.
okay, yeah. So basically, what I remember about this one is New World Tag Team Champions, right?
Yeah, I know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and really great limb-based wrestling going on. I remember they're attacking the arm. It's basically what stands out in my mind. But new tag team champions. It's a pretty long match from what I remember.
Wicked lot, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, awesome match.
Yeah, Morton and Gibson are both banged up from Starrcade '86, which is probably about a week prior, maybe 2 weeks prior. And so they actually worked Gibson's leg first, and then they worked Morton's arm. So it was double face
Okay.
apparently. But the Morton one was the longer one of the two.
Yeah, that's what stands out about memory.
Yeah, I think the crazy thing is, and like I was talking about, and I just ran down their '86 roster. So this is the first time Paul Jones actually got somebody worth a damn in his little stable.
Yeah.
And too bad Rude left, because it would have been nice to seen what a new heel team could have done that wasn't the Horsemen, Midnights, or the Koloffs. Especially because they ended up losing Nikita, right? And I think that's one of the things was they thought, oh, we have to replace Magnum with Nikita, right? But they didn't reload on the heel side, and I think that's kind of what hurt 87. But anyways, well, we were talking about Raging and Ravishing. Yeah, it was a good match. Manny Fernandez stood out to me in that match, I would say. Rude didn't really get good until, let's say, 89-ish. Like, you know,
Yeah.
he looked fine, but Manny was he's a
Yeah,
workhorse.
Manny's awesome.
Yeah, he looked good.
Yeah,
And
there may be a little bit another Manny match in my future.
oh, I'm looking forward to it because I don't think I have another Manny Fernandez. So yeah, more Raging Bull for sure, brother. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, to me, the reason why it's in the 80s as opposed to higher is I just found that the heat segment wore on a little bit longer than it probably could have. But other than that, you know, it's a solid match and pretty crazy too. You know, like you said, to me, Manny, I watched the 86 World Championship Wrestling the Saturday nights leading up to the match, and Rage and Ravishing still kind of came off kind of mid-cardy to me. Rock and Roll Express felt like main event, and it's a pretty surprising victory. And I think it's the type of victory that helps the heels. It doesn't devalue the titles. I want to make that clear. But yeah, it was a shocker. I felt like it was an upset.
Yeah, I think that once I wrap up on getting through the late 90s with all the stuff I'm watching right now, that my next goal is going to be to tackle those TV episodes of WCW on the network. Seems like it'd be a lot of fun just kind of watch those chronologically.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like I said, I'm thinking about doing a similar project. I'm thinking of trying to do Mid-Atlantic, Florida, and Georgia, and then end up at World Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Be crazy. But So yeah, that was remind me, was that your 60, brother?
Yeah, so you're at 59, I think.
59, another long Rock and Roll Express. We're talking about their debut match. It's July 1985. They're going up against the World Tag Team Champions, Ivan Koloff, and the turncoat Crusher Khrushchev.
Yeah, I got that one higher.
You sure do, brother, because it's a good match. All right, what's your 59?
All right, my 59 is Lex Luger versus Ricky Steamboat from the Great American Bash 1989, July 23rd.
Oh, man, the total package. Yes, I have this higher.
You do have it higher? Okay.
Yes. My number 58 is, oh, we talked about this. We didn't talk about it, but you said it, so we'll talk about it. Is Vader versus Dustin Rhodes from Clash of the Champions 23.
Yeah, let me see where I had that.
Talk about it. Yes.
Yeah, so I just remember it being like sort of like an action-packed sprint. You know, there's not really any downtime to it. They're just beating the crap out of each other. That's kind of my memory of it. I remember it just being a pretty much a brutal war. They had really good chemistry.
Yeah, I thought they had really good chemistry. I think this falls into my big people throwing people around genre that I really love, that I've come to find that I knew I loved it, but now I realize it dominates what I love. So, yeah.
I remember I took a note about how Dustin kind of surprised me with his strength in this one.
Yeah, I think Dustin's similar to Barry Windham in so many ways. Both
that's a good point. Yeah,
and I think both with in terms of BW and Dustin, we find that they work smaller than they are height wise, but it's because they're a little lean. But I think it makes them versatile, and they can catch off guard with these sort of big power spots. Were you talking about the time he caught Vader doing that whole body weight gimmick in the corner and then slammed him?
Yeah, I just remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was saying that was wild. Yeah. And then, yeah, so I think, yeah, like you said, it's definitely a bomb throwing match. They're really just throwing the best they have at each other. And, they're just, Dustin's punching him in the mouth. He's catching him. Vader's doing his stuff. You know, he's working the corner really well, kicking ass. And then, we ended up getting the, there's a nice Crusher Blackwell spot for all those AWA fans listening to this podcast right now, where he does the Weeble Wobble spot, and Dustin's trying everything he can do to knock Vader off his feet, and then he finally does the Flying Larry. I love stuff like that, because, I love when there's little battles inside the context of a match that you can use to pop the crowd. So, and the fact that you go aerial to get him off his feet, it's just all worked together real nice. He hits the big bulldog. And at this time, Hogan's in at this point. Dustin, he's been the U.S. champion. He's kind of, he could break through. Vader's the man, is the man. He's going to fight Hogan later on 95. This would have been a huge victory for Dustin. So that bulldog really felt like a lot. And Vader ends up, Harley Race ends up distracting him. And I have a note that Vader used the glam slam, which I kind of have a memory of, but I didn't realize that he actually used that move as a finish. But yeah, so it's a great match.
Yeah, for sure. And so at my number 58, I think you've already named this one, and we've talked about the feud a little bit already anyway, is the DDP versus Randy Savage from Spring Stampede 97 from Tupelo, Mississippi.
Oh, Tupelo. Have you ever been to Tupelo, Mississippi, brother?
Ah, man, my band played a show. I've played some shows in Mississippi, but I don't know if I can't remember. I don't know if I've been to Tupelo.
I can't remember if you had the pleasure of being in Tupelo.
I've been to Mississippi. I can tell you that, but I just don't know where I've been.
I've been to Mississippi. I've been to Biloxi. Won $220 at a roulette table, and my best friend met the love of his year. Wouldn't say the but he ended up dating that guy for like a year, so that was pretty crazy. Nice. So that was I made them get Waffle House. I love Waffle House a
Oh
lot.
man, smothered, covered, yeah, whatever.
Oh my God.
All
Well,
the
I
all the
it's
all of those things, I'll take them all.
yeah, you know they don't have Waffle Houses in the North. Did you realize this?
I did not realize that, no.
No, it's a sad existence we have up here. And yes, so every time I go down south, I make a very big point of getting
Making
Waffle House as much as I can.
it. Hey, you know, that's a big wrestler, right? Wrestlers love Waffle House. Go get their chicken from the Waffle House, right?
I mean, it makes sense too, especially if you're down south. I mean, there's one on I-95 the whole way there, so if
Yeah.
you're Eastern Seaboard.
Basically, the Spring Stampede, the only thing I'll just add to it, I guess, since we're on it, is basically this is the match that DDP kind of credits as skyrocketing his career and, you know, into stardom. He's become, this is the match that he kind of like looks back on and says, hey, this was my moment when Savage would, you know, let me put him, or let, you know, me nail him with a diamond cutter basically. And it was a big moment. I mean, the match is awesome. They brawl around. I think as far as just like entertainment value, I may have liked, like I said before, the Great American Bash one just a little bit more just within the match. But as far as like the whole match and moment altogether, this one of all their matches certainly has the best finish, and it's just a ton of fun.
Honestly, this match might be my favorite match of them all. Like, not just like of the series. I mean, of like WCW as a promotion. Like, to the point where like it like bugs me that it's only like 62 on my list. Like, I feel like I should get it higher.
So you mean this is your personal
Like
favorite
my
match
personal
of
favorite. Like,
WCW?
it brings me great joy to watch this match.
Yeah.
I
Submit that thing number one when you turn this in. I won't tell
well I
anybody.
Oh man, God! I mean, there's just so many Flair matches that bring me a lot of joy too. But for me, this is like Randy Savage at his heel peak, and like he comes off like you, the people talk about Ken Shamrock being the world's most dangerous man, and legitimately, he actually probably was. But Randy Savage feels like the world's most dangerous man. I love when he just nails referees. I mean, this match is 5 stars because of that. Like, he smokes the referee, pile drives him, rips all the buttons off his shirt. It is like, oh, I love it. And there's just so much Savage cheating, and it's just, oh, it's such a terrific Randy Savage performance.
Well, you talked about earlier, you said, I think you said either 98 or 99 that DDP was one of the best in the world. Do you think it kind of, I mean, not only does his career kind of take off here, but do you think that that performer kind of takes off here?
Yeah, I agree with that assessment also. I mean, I watched some DDP in 96. Actually, to be honest with you, the path, if you know what to look for there, it's there. The DDP, even I want to say there's like a 95 or a 96 match. No, it's 96. Like, it was DDP versus like Jim Duggan for like the ring that he won in that stupid battle royal. Like, he put a lot of thought, oh, that's what it was. It's all flooding back to me now. DDP as a heel. Oh my God, what a bumper. And what a stooge. He was tripping in like cable cords against like Jim Duggan or Alex Wright. I don't know who the hell he was wrestling, Nitro. But like, the dude was putting the work in, and he was looking like an idiot. He was a heel, so you're supposed to look like an idiot. But in the Spring Stampede match, I always liken DDP to John McClane of Die Hard.
Oh man, that's one of my
Yeah.
favorites. I just
You
watched
know,
that the other night. Yeah,
it's a Christmas movie, brother.
it
And
is.
he's got the blue jeans, he's got the everyman blue collar, attitude. He's got the injured ribs. He's always fucked up from the NWO. He dies hard. He never dies. And he's always coming back. And so I just think, and once you get the character, plus the fact that he every single match he's trying, he's given like 120% in every match he's got. It's just great. And like I said, Savage still carries the load, at least in this match, in terms of the healing is just so fantastic in this match.
Yeah, and you talked about this earlier, but it's like it's so cool how WCW kind of spaced out the main events here. I mean, you got DDP and Savage at the top of the card, and they're still doing 210,000 pay-per-view buys.
Oh yeah, I mean it's crazy because I can actually like just break like remember this like without looking at anything. April you have DDP Savage, and then May is the Outsiders versus the Horsemen, Wolfpack versus the Horsemen. June is they go back to Savage DDP, so it's a month gap or 2 month gap there. Then July they do the whole Hogan Luger thing, and then they go back to it's a tag team, but with Rodman. But it's Hogan Luger is the central point. August is Hogan Luger. September they go back to the Horsemen Outsiders. That's the central point of the War Games. And then October it's they go back to DDP Savage on the undercard, but with Hogan Piper to headline. I think they just do a great job.
There's a little bit of a narrative out there that's like that the WCW main events didn't deliver. And I would say that during this point in time, quite the opposite, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's I don't read Meltzer from this time, but my understanding is that Scott Keith would just parrot whatever Meltzer said. So maybe it was a Meltzer thing, but it was definitely a Scott Keith thing. And I think Scott Keith being free and at the time with there not being a lot of video distribution had a lot of influence on people's takes.
Yeah, because WCW was in fact delivering on those main events. Lots of fun stuff there.
A lot of great stuff. Yeah. I remember. I bet if we looked up Scott Keith's review of the Slamboree 97 match, he would dog it. And ours, like, you're out to lunch, brother. Hey, but Scott Keith did. I always am a little wary about dogging on him too much because I'll say this about Scott Keith. When I was a child, I had no one else to turn to, and the dude delivered. I wouldn't be the person I am today without him because he did. Even if the information was 50-50 on whether it was correct, he did. He was the way I could learn about it, honestly. So he did teach me a lot about 80s and 90s wrestling.
Yeah, I think I was back in the. In the late, I guess in the 90s of like around 1996 or something, I was looking at the, there was like a website. It may still be out there. I don't know. Lords of Pain.
Oh, I remember that one. I don't know if that one's still out there.
Yeah. I feel like that probably half the stuff on there was right. Half of it was not. it's been a long time since I looked at it. I started getting into, I moved on to like that, the PW Insider site for quite a while. At some point, but
I was really happy to see that two of my favorite sites when I was a child are still around, prowrestlinghistory.com, and it has the exact same format.
Nice.
So nostalgic. It's amazing that the sidebar looks exactly like it did in 1998. But he stopped updating this year or last year, but he says he's focusing on like Ohio wrestling history. So, but the site's still there. It's great. And then the other one's wrestlingtitles.com, which I believe is run by Great Hissa. I think he's kind of semi-famous, and it's what a resource that again, the style of the page is exactly how I remember it in 1998. So it's awesome.
Nice. That's awesome. It's still out there.
Yeah. And updated too, so it's pretty sweet. Are we on to mine? What's
57.
Going on? Is it me?
Yeah, I think it's you for 57. We just did my 58, so.
All right. I'm going to trust you on this one. War Games. Okay, first, before I say this, if Elliot is listening, don't kill me. But anyways, all right, so number 57 is War Games number one.
All right, we'll talk about. Well, we may not talk about mine because you may have it higher, but that's funny because my 57 is War Games 94.
Oh, I have that one actually higher.
But yeah, let's talk about your 50s. Or wait, actually, I have yours higher, so I guess we'll wait for both of them.
All right, so my 56, we brought it up a little bit earlier on, and it's the most recent match I watched. I think I watched it yesterday. It's the Fantastics versus the Sheepherders from the Crockett Cup 1986.
Yeah, I thought this was great when I watched it, and I know, like you mentioned, you know, it's one of the the Dave Meltzer five-star matches that I guess was a holy grail for some time.
And I
really liked it. I thought it was really good, but it didn't make my list.
Yeah, no, I thought it had pretty extraordinary hype and expectation to it, but I thought it still delivered. Yeah, the thing I want to bring up with Meltzer is, while I don't agree with his critical assessment too often, I do think he's invaluable as a journalist and a historian, so I just want to make sure that people know I'm pro-Meltzer in general.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it,
great historian.
Yeah, if you think about it, even though, even like, obviously, I'm sure you've seen or heard that Bischoff is like super hard on him for the 83 Weeks podcast. And I'm pretty sure Pritchard and some of the Conrad vehicles, a lot of the guys that he talks to are pretty hard on Meltzer, but they still utilize the Observer to sort of walk through that history as they talk about it. So,
for sure.
Like you said, whether or not you agree with him or think that he was presenting opinion as fact or whatever your criticisms may be. Like you said, it is still a pretty significant historical reference for everyone.
Yeah, I think the weird thing about Meltzer is, and it speaks more to wrestling media in general, is nowhere in no other sport or other entertainment or anything else in this world would require one person to do three jobs. He has to be a, you know, present day journalist. Has to be a historian. Most historian people specialize in writing history books. People specialize in journalism. And then on top of that, also be a critic. So I think people get so confused by that, right? Like, some people want to bitch about the journalism. No one, I think, ever bitches about the historic stuff. He's great at that. And then some people want to bitch about the critic stuff. And I just want to point out, like, two out of the three, I think he's fantastic. I just don't agree with him. What he thinks is great wrestling is just usually not what I think is great wrestling, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah. So, anyways, this is five stars. I don't think it's five stars, but it's okay. It's still a great match. And what was great about this was this is the Bobby Fulton match to watch. I think a lot of people, they'll focus on Tommy Rogers, especially in the midnight. That's going to be a more work rate based feud. This is Bobby Fulton in his element, leading the people in the Pledge of Allegiance. Booty shaking his way to victory. Well, they don't actually win, but booty shaking his way to victory regardless. Booty shaking his way into my heart is what I'll say. And, and bringing it to the sheep herders. And really what it comes down to is it ends up being like quintuple juice. Like everyone's bleeding, but he's the first to bleed. And his face in peril is fantastic. You have to see it to believe it. I can't do it justice, but the way he sells the blood loss and getting beat up by the sheep herders, fantastic. The flagpole gets involved. There's a great moment where it looks like Fulton's going in the flagpole. He stops it, sends the sheep herder into the flagpole. Everyone's bleeding. Melee ensues. Katie bar the door. It's breaking down, breaking loose in Tulsa, wherever the fuck they are. It's breaking loose down there. Jack Victory ends up bleeding. The whole place is bleeding. The referees call the match out. At one point, Tommy Rogers looks like he's about to cold cock the ref. Tempers are flaring. It's all the rage, baby. It's the Fantastics versus the Sheep Herders, 1986, Jack.
Awesome. My number 56 is, we talked about Manny, and we got Manny here. It's the Mexican Death Match. Manny Fernandez versus Abdullah the Butcher from Starrcade 85, 11/28/85.
Oh, brother, you're a better man than I. I have not. I don't know if I have the stomach for this.
Dude, this match is violent. I mean, it is just violent. Like, I mean, the one that sticks out is like Manny takes off his boot, and he is just killing this guy. And actually, you know, Abby, he's selling this thing. He's getting the shit kicked out of him. There's a part where he's like, I have a memory of him just kind of like sitting on the middle rope at one point because he seems like he's been beat up so much and he is like so exhausted that he's just like just basically like, you know what, I'm just gonna sit here for a little while. he just kind of just sits on the middle rope. But I will say, like, I feel like that this match is kind of underrated a little bit. Like, I don't really hear anybody ever talk about it so much as a classic or anything, but to me it is. Like, Manny, they really go at each other here. Like I said, it is violent. You know, it's not one you're going to, you know, show your kids or anything until But it's a classic. Along the same lines of a match, and I may have heard, I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like that there was somebody that talked about this match in a podcast not too long ago and kind of said that they kind of, and I could be wrong about this, but I think this is the match they were talking about. They kind of compared it to Magnum and Tully just a little bit, like not as transcendent, I guess, or whatever, but just it's just violent, it's pretty epic. And if you haven't seen it in a while, or
Never
maybe,
seen it like me.
yeah, or you think that Abdullah is maybe not the greatest worker or whatever. I don't know what your thoughts are as far as on that, but
You know
it's
what my
just.
thought is on Abdullah, and I just saw him the other day for the not for the first time, I've seen him before, but like the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
He's always shorter than I remember. He's not tall. He's kind of like a tub of goo.
Yeah, I mean, he has the thing in his tights, and he's hitting people in the forehead with
Oh yeah,
it.
the fork is great. I mean, I like the Abdullah character, but
Yeah.
Tully brought him in to beat up Dusty in the clips I was watching. I'm like, I'm looking at Abdullah. I'm just like, I think I would tower over this dude. I think I'm like a good 6 inches taller than him. Like, I don't know.
Would you, so are you trying to say that you think you could take him
No, no, I couldn't. I literally
in 1985?
yeah, I'm like Jim Cornette. I couldn't. I really empathized with Jim Cornette when he said in his babyface turn against Paul E, my whole life I knew that I could never whip anybody until I met Paul E Dangerously, and that's how I feel. Like, I don't feel like I could whoop nobody, but I feel like there will come a moment in my life where I'll need to whoop somebody, and I will meet that person. But as of right now, there ain't nobody I could whoop.
So you said you've never seen that one, right?
No, I never seen Abby.
Yeah, man, it's worth your time.
No.
Check it out. See what you think.
Yeah, no, for sure, brother. I definitely wrote it down, so I'll take a look at it. I'm always I have an open mind, and I like violence, so
You'll get it with this one.
let the bloodletting begin, brother.
Yeah, for sure. You're 55.
Now get ready to boogie. It's the World Tag Team Champions Rock and Roll Express versus Ole and Arn Anderson, Starrcade 86 steel cage match.
That one is higher for me.
I guess we'll have to put off the
Yeah,
boogie
you gotta hold off for a pretty good
in.
while for that one.
The ring announcer says that at the very beginning. That's the way he introduces it. He goes, "Now get ready to boogie."
So my number 55 is a tag match also. It's the Steiners versus the Nasty Boys from Halloween Havoc, October 27th, 1990. I bet you had
Brother,
this one higher.
you disappoint me greatly. This should be much higher. This is
Hey, well,
the
that's the way I felt about Starrcade that you
Let
just
me
named, so.
that's how you find above right on, man. Believe, man, believe. I want to feel that conviction. All right, am I up next then?
Yeah,
Whew.
54.
I'm a little, let's see here. All right, we got all right. So we got it's a Nature Boy Ric Flair match. Is the no, he's not the world's heavyweight champion in this match. Very odd. He's challenging for the title against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. It's March 18th in Landover, Maryland. This is the handheld.
Yeah, I've got that one just a little bit higher.
All right, dude, you're winning the game right now.
Yeah. So my 54 is Psicosis versus Rey Mysterio at Bash at the Beach 1996, one of my 5-year-old son's favorite matches.
Let me tell you, me and your 5-year-old are disappointed at how low you got this.
I know he's gonna when he gets older, if he gets hold of this tape and listens to it, he's gonna be like, "Dad, what are you doing? That should be your number. That should be your number two." Because we'll get into my son's favorite match later.
Let me tell you something. You might have to be worried about him taking care of you in your golden years with that type of
I'm
rankings.
surprised we may get a run in. He might can hear me from his room. I'm not sure. So if I go silent, you know what happened.
All right, he woke up at 1:30 in the morning. He's raising hell now.
Dude, he was Rey Mysterio for Halloween this year. This kid loves Rey Mysterio. Like,
oh, that's great. And you know what's awesome is that Rey Mysterio still wrestles.
Dude, yeah, I know. And he got to see Rey Mysterio at Raw last year, and it was so awesome. I was really hoping that Rey Mysterio would be there, obviously. And luckily, he came out twice that night for the Raw in Nashville. So he was so pumped. And also, he's not going to be listening to this before Christmas, I don't think. I got him a cameo from Rey Mysterio for Christmas this year. So you think he's gonna flip out about that too?
Absolutely, brother.
Yeah. But anyway, all right. You're 53.
No boogie in this one. It's we're getting down to business. It's the U.S. Heavyweight Champion, one of my personal favorites. I love this man, Greg the Hammer Valentine. He can always be my Valentine on Valentine's Day, and he's taking on the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper. For the viewing audience, it's 2:30 in Boston. I'm getting a little punchy. Versus Rowdy Roddy Piper from Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, July 9th. This is the hidden gem thing.
Yeah, this match is higher for me.
Let me
spoiler alert. I love Piper and Valentine.
you're the man, brother. You know who would love you is Elliot. I don't know if Elliot's gonna listen to this. I'm gonna make sure he does.
Yeah. So I got Piper and Valentine, man. That's my jam right there.
All right. Roll on with your next one, my man.
Okay, so we got number 53, right?
I think so. That's okay. Why I said roll on, because I couldn't remember what
happened. So number 53 for me is Sting. He's back. But this time he's in his American flag face paint against Ric Flair.
He's back in black, but he isn't.
At the Great American Bash 1990, which is July 7th, 1990. I bet you don't have this one on your list.
You know what's crazy? First off, you would win that bet. I've never even watched this match. I'm blown
okay. All right. Well, I'll just say this. It's one of their highest selling pay-per-views at that time since early 88. And it was about 200,000 buys. So let me just tell you, for those that don't like the Sting Flair matchup, it seems to me like that they made money. So we'll start with that. just a big comparison. Go ahead. Sorry.
I said I have a Sting Flair match, just so you know.
Okay. Good deal. But also, I'm just going to throw this out there, too. This sold more pay-per-views than any of the Flair Steamboat matches from 89 and the Flair Funk matches and the Flair Luger matches, all of which I think I have ranked higher than this. But
that hurts me. I'm just
making a point here as to, like, hey, this was a great moment. You know, Sting Flair was money. You got Sting in the American flag gear. The match was good enough. You know, the moment's great. It's an all-time segment for WCW. And, you know, you ask yourself when you're looking at this, you're talking greatest WCW matches. At what point does the match combined with the moment surpass just the match? So I kind of ask myself that question a little bit when I'm making a list like this. And at number 53, I feel like that's where I am with Sting and Flair. I really thought that, you know, is that they call him the dude with attitude, stand up. I think they kind of come out and block the horseman from running out.
I see.
Such a super cool moment. And when it's just a cool moment. Job well done. It's a classic. It's a good main event. Big pop finish. And I think it's a moment that fans never forget as far as WCW fans. And I mean, truly, like, isn't that what it's all about, man?
Yeah, brother. I mean, you make a compelling argument. I for sure is, you know, the number one goal of professional wrestling, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I think I think Sting even maybe like a year or two ago at one of those conventions broke out the American flag face paint again.
No way. That's pretty cool.
But anyway, yeah, I would say that the match itself, you know, while it may not be the greatest like in-ring classic of all time, it's still super entertaining, and it's an awesome moment. So that's where it is. 53
rolling on to 52. It's 1992, baby. It's Saturday night. It's the Dangerous Alliance in their last gasp. It's Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and the Cruncher Larry Zbyszko versus the Dragon Ricky Steamboat, Dustin Rhodes and Nikita Gola. I think this might be my only Nikita match. I'm not a huge Nikita guy. So we got a Nikita match. It's from 92 too. So pretty crazy.
Yeah, I like this match a lot too. I think when I watched them last, I think I kind of liked the one from February just a little bit more. That we talked about earlier. So I put that one on the list and kind of left this one off to kind of have some room for some of the other stuff. But I remember really liking this one too. So you go ahead.
I see your diversity argument. I'm all for diversity. I like it. Yeah. I dig it. So talking about this match, I'll say this. So Smart's Choice, like I think I brought up a couple times, Smart's Choice Top 100. This was actually the last match from that 100 that I hadn't watched. So this was a bittersweet match for me. It meant like it was sort of the end. You know, I mean, obviously I'm learning more stuff from you and I appreciate that Manny versus Abby stuff. That's interesting to me. But for me, this was kind of like the end of the road. Like I had seen everything that was hyped. So, and it delivered in spades. I've talked before, the babyface shine, you know, to me, it's something I love. And I think I love it for two reasons. One, it's super fun, energetic, makes me feel good. And isn't that what all professional wrestling's about? It's making you feel good. The other thing is it gets you invested in the babyface. A lot of people say Americans love underdogs, and I don't disagree, but we love underdogs that have a chance of winning. We don't like losers. And I think that's true of humans in general. I just don't want to say Americans. But, we don't like losers. So the babyface shine makes you believe that the babyface has a chance. He's coming in on all cylinders firing, and he's looking good, and you believe he has a chance. And so you're going to get invested. If he comes and gets wiped out, oh, we feel sympathy for him. I don't feel sympathy for shit. He's a loser. All right. So that was a little mean, but you know what I'm talking about. And so what I'm just trying to get at is the shine is a very integral portion of the match. And people who piss on the shine will piss on them. Nah, that's a little mean, but you know what I'm talking about. And it's 2:45 in the morning here. And so this is just a great babyface shine. This is, and to me, what this match is all about is Larry Zbysko is the biggest loser in the world, and it's just funny watching him fuck up in every way. The best part of this is it's 2 out of 3 falls. I don't know if I mentioned that. So the first fall, they do the Eaton gimmick, but it's with Steamboat. I talked about it before in that February match. Is Steamboat comes flying in your screen, Whiteside Zbysko. He wins the fall. Third fall, Zbysko. Anderson ducks and Nikita ends up hitting the sickle. Larry Zbysko was screening Anderson ducks and Nikita hits the sickle on him to win. So Larry Zbysko lost the first fall, cost him the third fall by fucking up Arn and screening him. And Larry Zbysko was the one who lost War Games 92. So it's very fun. But the best part is the second fall. So in order to have a third fall, you have to have a second fall, which is a Dangerous Alliance victory. So how do you get around the whole Larry Zbysko screwing up thing? Well, Larry Zbysko in the second fall gets a phone smashed into his head by Dustin Rhodes. So it triggers a disqualification. So even in victory, Larry Zbysko is a loser. So I think this is tremendous. It's awesome. Just a super fun match, a lot of work rate, but that Larry Zbysko thing puts it over the top for me, lifts it on high, almost to the top 50. Not quite there, but we're getting to the top 50. All right.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. I'd like to think that even at 2:45 in the morning Eastern time, I still have good points every once in a while.
Well, at 1:44, or no, actually, I guess, well, my clock says 1:44, so I'm going to go with that. 1:44 Central time. At number 52, I've got a total home run segment for WCW Nitro, and it happened on July 29th, 1996. Match itself is really good, but all the stuff that happens after is the craziness. It's Sting, Luger, Savage versus Flair, Benoit, and Mongo. You got
is
that
this,
one?
No, I don't. Is this the one that Chad really likes?
Yeah. Well, I think he had it. Of course, when they did where the big boys played, did that podcast where they walked through like their favorite 100 matches of all time from all promotions. And he had it ranked, if I remember correctly, he had it ranked, you know, pretty high on for all promotions. Yeah. So, yeah, he's a big fan of this match. Yeah. from what I
Yeah, okay. I
understand.
thought that was that one. Yeah, no, I need to rewatch this. I know I watched it at some point, but I need to rewatch it. So why don't you break it down for me?
Well, I mean, they have their good match, and at some point, Jimmy Hart runs out and is like, "Hey, I can't remember what he says. He's just saying crap's going down backstage or whatever." And you know, the big th I think the thing that everyone would remember from this is when they go back into the back. It's when Rey Mysterio gets lawn darted into a trailer.
Yes,
So,
that is
you know what I'm
super
talking
famous.
about?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm for
Yeah,
sure.
and like
Yes. Yeah.
woman is like crying, and there's you know, I feel like that the announcers were like really putting it over really well. And I know that like over on the PWO board, a lot of folks just talk about what it was like for them to dedicate like an entire segment to this and kind of just throw the show off the rails, because basically, you know, folks that went to the arena that night to watch the show, their main event was kind of just, it kind of disappeared, I guess. And everyone went backstage, and the backstage angle lasted a really long time. I don't know. It's just the combination of a really fun match to start off with, you know, Sting, Luger, Savage, Flair, Benoit, Mongo, like it's going to be good. And from what it leads to when Jimmy Hart runs out, I think I've heard someone point out before that Jimmy Hart was like a really good choice because it looked like it could have been like a ploy from the dungeon or something like that. He runs out, and Luger is like the first one that's like, "Hey, what's going on here?" And they get backstage, and that's when all hell breaks loose. So I would say it's just a huge segment for Nitro and one of the most memorable matches and moments that they ever had. I'm not sure. I'll have to check and. Well, no, it's definitely not my highest Nitro match. I was about to say it might be my highest Nitro match, but it's not. But either way, it's still just an awesome moment. Nitro won the ratings war that night, 3 to 2.1.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty solid victory. Yeah, no, I do remember the show, and like you said, it was almost like they were sacrificing the live. What that was at Disney, wasn't it?
I don't remember off the top of my head where that was.
I want to say that was at Disney. I wonder if they feel like they could have gotten away with it because it was free attendance.
That's a good point that I haven't heard someone else say before, if that was the case.
I want to say it was. It was definitely outdoors because
Yeah,
I
I
can.
remember that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say it was at Disney, and I think that's kind of what. But like you said, let's table that for a second. But I think what they did was they sacrificed a week of TV, sacrificed the live attendance for gains going forward. Like, oh shit, anything can happen. The
Right?
NWO is a
Yeah, and it
total
worked.
gang.
It
It
worked.
worked, Jim.
Yeah.
Worked big time. Worked overtime. You know who else was working overtime?
Let me hear it.
Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, maybe. Or is Steve Armstrong or Scott Armstrong? I can't believe I don't know this. I'm
I'm
tired.
gonna I'm
Is it
gonna
Steve?
I'm
Steve
gonna
or
go with
Scott?
let's go with Steve.
I think it's Steve. Fuck.
I've got
Do I
this
have?
one high. The good thing is that you're not even telling me what it is, but I've got this one higher.
Yeah, that's the Midnight Express versus the Southern Boys. All right.
Yeah,
What's
I've got this one just a little bit higher. That's too
your
much.
fifth? What's your 51, brother?
My 51st favorite WCW match is Sting, Lex Luger, and Randy Savage versus. And so this is you're kind of we're kind of if you haven't noticed, I did Sting, Ric Flair, Great American Bash 1990, Sting,
Yeah.
Luger, Savage, Flair, Benoit, Mongo. We're kind of in my moments section here, right? So my number 51 is probably the biggest. I mean, I'm just gonna guess. Like, I guess it's got to be like the biggest moment in WCW history, right? Sting, Luger, and Savage versus the Outsiders and a Mystery Partner at Bash at the Beach, 1996, 7/7/96.
Yeah, I wonder who that mystery partner is. Is it Mabel?
I think it's yeah. So what happened was, is like everyone thought it was going to be Sting, but when Mabel came out,
Ruined for everyone for a loop. They're like, he shouldn't be here. Isn't he in the WWF right now?
yeah. So
But whose side is he on?
one thing that I thought was, of course, this is Daytona Beach, Florida. It's Hogan's heel turn, huge moment. Do you have this on your list? Probably not.
No, I don't actually.
Okay, cool. Well, so. this pay-per-view did 250,000 buys, which is 80,000 from the previous pay-per-view up, and 100,000 higher than the pay-per-view before that. So this pay-per-view had legs, and it was more actually than the Bash of the Beach with Flair versus Hogan, I believe.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So I think that prior to this, that, and this is random when I was looking at this, that prior to this, the uncensored 1996 was the only other pay-per-view to reach 250,000 buys at this point.
I should tell Kevin Sullivan this. So Kevin Sullivan, he has a podcast now. I've been listening to it quite a bit. Have you listened to it?
No, I've never listened to it.
Now it's decent. He's a good dude. He's from Boston, so people from Boston are pretty good. And the thing is, his co-host is very, very, very mediocre. And he doesn't really push Kevin to like explain. Sometimes Kevin can kind of just repeat himself a little bit. Right. And the other thing is, the guy, it's a very weird thing. He's like, he kind of just says, he just parrots like normal things that like internet wrestling fans say. So you're talking to Kevin Sullivan and he's just like bashing the Dungeon of Doom. Anyway, so the alliance to end Hulkamania comes up, which is the whole uncensored 96 thing. And the guy just does the typical bashing of it. Sullivan doesn't even really defend it. He's kind of like, it was a means to an end. I needed to turn Hogan heel and da da da. He kept saying that over and over again, which was a cool point. I didn't realize that he felt the need to make Hogan trust him so that he could eventually feel comfortable turning heel. So anyways, I will let Sullivan know that he can tell his hoity-toity.
Yeah, he sold pay-per-views.
He sold tickets. He sold freaking pay-per-views with his gimmick. Now, to be honest with you, I've never seen that match. I would like to watch the build to it, but I don't know if I'd want to watch the match.
Yeah, and of course, like with this Bash of the Beach match, you can – it's if you go and look up the pay-per-view buys for the company, you can see a clear turn of events for WCW after the show. And then, of course, this basically eventually led up to like the monster pay-per-view for them at the time of Starrcade 96, which was like 345,000 buys, which was huge at the time. And as we talked about earlier, it gets more than doubled in 97. So you just got to think about the growth rate of what's going on here. And it kind of all started here. And in my opinion, obviously the last 5 minutes of this is probably the most famous 5 minutes of a show that you can imagine. I mean, I don't know, like if there's really much. There's not many moments, I guess you could say, in WCW history, and maybe not any other moments in WCW history that are more famous than the Hogan heel turn and then the eventual pay per view that happens at the end. Can you think of anything?
No, it is. It's definitely by far the most famous 90s moment. And then I think but I think at the end of the day, it is just the most. I mean, yeah, I don't think you can say any of the Flair and Dusty stuff is actually more famous than the Hogan heel turn. It's
and just like where it led, far away. You know, it kind of can almost credit the boom of the. I mean, is this the beginning of the boom of the late 90s? Is this the
oh for sure
that sets it off, right? Yeah. So yeah. I know for me personally as a fan, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, someone came to me and said, Hogan's a bad guy now. Dennis Rodman's going to be there. I mean, and you can just see it. You see it in the TV ratings. You see it in the pay-per-view buys. Like this.
So you weren't watching.
No, I had not come back yet. In fact, I'm going to guess. I don't. So that Nitro that we talked about, where Mysterio is lawn darted into the trailer, I'm thinking, I could be wrong. I remember this in my head. So I either saw highlights of it or something, but I'm guessing around that time, because it was shortly after Bash at the Beach 96 that I turned it on for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, no, it's crazy because I became a fan in 97. And my dad's trying to explain to me that Hulk Hogan was a good guy. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's Hollywood Hogan. Hulk Hogan was never a guy. He's a piece of shit. No, I didn't say that at 8 years old, but you know, that's what I was thinking.
And Hogan's promo at the end of Bash of the Beach 96 is really awesome. And Shivani
is iconic. So good.
Shivani is just so good. You know, there's that classic line, the go straight to hell or whatever he says. So
Oh, that's good.
yeah.
Yeah, they did such a great job with the NWO for that year and a half was just they could do no wrong.
Yeah, so it's a really good match with a awesome moment there. I think 51's a good spot for it because when you're talking about the greatest matches in WCW history, I feel like stuff like that really does hold weight.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think impact and influence is definitely up.
Do you have an Oh yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just talking about impact and influence. I agree that's important criteria for this.
What's your number 50?
I think it's time, brother.
You want
Mentioned at the end of that, it was getting too late, so we wrapped up there. Finished up at 51, so we'll hit up the top 50 in the next episode. Hope you enjoyed what you listened to and that you come back next week as we count down, starting from 50, the greatest WCW and Jim Crockett promotions matches of all time. Take care, everybody.
Self high five.